Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Time now for the WEEI Producers Show on WEEI. WEEI.
And streaming everywhere on the Odyssey app.
Well, what do you know? The Classic Producers Show's back for a week. What's up, Billy Lanny?
What's going on?
It's Sean and Lanny with you here on a rainy and gross Saturday morning here in the city of Boston.
That hasn't changed.
No, nothing
has
changed.
When we were doing this consistently, we had very rare was there sun.
Yeah, there was never sun. Why would the sun come out for us?
The weather knew we were back.
Yeah, exactly. The weather knew we were back. They played it this way, and that's okay.
No, there was a drought because there was no producer show.
That's true. Joe's on it.
Yep.
Joe Braverman behind the glass.
I'm here every Saturday. You don't think I notice this stuff?
Notices it.
Look at that. And shout out to all the rain helping, hopefully, with a lot of those brush fires and such going on across the Commonwealth because
you're welcome,
that was
farmers.
Scary. Yes, farmers, your crops shall be good this fall before the snow comes. Yeah, you excited for Thanksgiving?
Always. How could you not be?
Yeah.
It's literally a holiday made for eating.
Yeah, it's your favorite holiday of the year?
I'd say it is.
Yeah.
I'd say it is. You know, Christmas is so in your face, but I love the Christmas season.
Yeah.
Everybody's
for sure.
In a fake good mood. You know what I mean? Like, you know, people are frustrated because they're spending money, but like, they project happiness.
Yeah.
There are lights. There is music. It's awesome. But yeah, Thanksgiving's the tops.
Yeah. I just had to spend a ton of money yesterday. So I'm one of those people that's like walking around like cheery because it's Thanksgiving and Christmas season. And I'm like, nah, I hate myself.
You spending a lot. What are you hosting?
No, I got a thing going on. I had to go see a guy about a thing. It was a whole ordeal. I don't really want to talk about it on the air.
I think I got it.
Yeah. I feel like you're picking up what I'm putting down.
Yep,
here.
I got it.
This is the producer show.
Is it a Christmas gift?
No.
Okay.
Nope. It's,
would it be corny to give it on Christmas?
Some might think so.
All right.
I don't think it's necessarily, I think it's actually relatively commonplace to do it on Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
But I personally
you're
wouldn't
not
do
that
it
kind
on,
of guy.
No, that's not how I roll. I like to make it its own event. Not that I've done it before, but,
And one of those things where you hope you don't do it again.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
I think I cracked the code.
Yep. Billy's on it. This is the WEEI escape room with Billy Lanny.
Yeah,
he is
right,
just
exactly.
Solving all the problems.
Yep, no problem.
No issues here. So on this Saturday morning, we watched the Boston Celtics last night beat the Washington Wizards 108-96 in one of those classic NBA Cup games. I got to tell you, Billy, Jason Tatum, not great.
No.
0 of 10 from 3 last night. Guy could not throw the ball in the ocean. It was just one of those nights for him. Derek White was really cold early as well. He turned it on a little bit later. Still only ended up with 10 points. But the story of the day was the man who graced the cover of Men's Health with his superhero-like body, Jaylen Brown, and then proceeded to go out and drop 31-11 on the Washington Wizards.
That's what's awesome about this team. Is, you know, everybody says, oh, it's a two-headed monster. You got Tatum, you got Brown, but there's so much more to this team that when one of those guys struggled, there's enough people to pick it up for you. You know what I mean? 31 from Brown, Sam Hauser with 13, Holiday with 16. You know what I mean? So you don't really, you don't panic as much as you would if one guy is struggling because there's so much depth on the team that, and it's a great team. It's fun to watch. Your concern doesn't seem to exist with this team.
Yeah, it was a little nerve-wracking because for a long periods of time, they went just in these scoring droughts. Talk about droughts. I think it was in the first quarter. They went a period of like 3-plus minutes without scoring.
Right.
And I was like, oh, this is not.
It still won the quarter.
Yeah. Still not looking great. And then it's like, oh, 29-27. Okay, we're all right. We're in good shape. And so it's just, I think it's a testament to them as a team, the way they play. I mean, again, this is, you know, Missoula ball. It's the three game. So it's, you know, you may not score for 3 minutes, but then all of a sudden a flurry of threes and you're up 10.
That's
and
it's state just, of the NBA.
Yeah, exactly. And the Celtics were kind of, I don't want to say pioneers, but they were some of the forefront members of that group that were just like, yeah, let's just throw up threes.
Right, started with the Warriors.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Steph Curry kind of showed you the way, and then Joe Mazzulla has since taken it to a whole nother level.
And it's nuts, too, like, just to kind of, the threes they're hitting, just the distance they're hitting them from.
Yeah.
Just watching a guy bury a three from like two steps in front of the half court mark is just insane.
It's unreal. And I like it seems like they should be in like a Dude Perfect video where they're just hitting trick shots.
Yep.
Because that's just what they're doing. They're just like, yeah, I'll just hit it from over here.
Yeah, no problem.
Fade away.
And just like the form is just no different than like a free throw. It's like an effortless thing to chuck it up from 25 feet.
It's. Did you ever watch the classic kids, almost soap opera-y show, Degrassi?
No, I know of it.
Yeah.
There were two versions of it. There was one when I was, because I'm a little bit older than you, so there was a
that
version.
That had Drake before he became
Drake.
It did,
when he was
Aubrey
Graham.
Your version was the Drake version. I had the one, I had the generation before it.
Oh, wow, I didn't realize.
You had like the new class.
Yes,
you know
I did.
I mean? You had like the same
amount
of the
I had the class where your originals were like the teachers and the parents.
Yep.
Yeah, and so, in one of those episodes, Drake has like a beef with a new kid on the basketball team.
Okay.
And at this point, Drake is already in a wheelchair, and then he's like, I can still hit a three from way farther than you. And the kid's like, you're in a chair, bro. No way. And he just like sits there and he just launches one from like half court and it goes right in. And he's like, it's all about transfer of energy. And that's all I think of every time I see some guy.
Energy when your legs are dead.
I don't know.
It's everything in every sport starts from the legs up.
Yeah, you know what? Jimmy was built different. That's what I would say. But that's what I think of every single time these guys are yucking up shots from half court. I'm just like,
Drake
great,
in a wheelchair.
Great transfer of energy. Yeah, Drake in a wheelchair. No, but I think Drake's done all right for him. So I got to say, not to go on a complete tangent, what an evolution, by the way, to be on like a Canadian kids soap opera to being one of the all-time most selling rappers in history.
Insane. Top five musician.
Yeah,
you know
of
I mean?
All
even,
time.
Not even just style, just music in general.
Yeah, the amount of music, it is wild to me how in the zeitgeist Drake is.
Yep.
I thought it was so niche that I'm like, yeah, I watched this kid on Degrassi. He's so great. His newest mixtape was awesome.
Yeah.
Best You Ever Had was so good.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, he just blows up. I don't know. It's just weird tangent there. Sorry. But I think the important thing for me is that, like, even with a Tatum misstep, the Celtics team can just beat a bad Warriors team. Granted, the Warriors are 2-12. Like, this is not like the Cleveland Cavaliers you did this to. But do you think it was any kind of residual energy loss from that Cavs game, right? They put everything they had on the line in that Cavs game. Everybody was just pouring in shots.
Mm-hmm.
And this was kind of like almost could have been a trap game if not for Jaylen Brown.
Correct. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Kind of like reset everything.
Yeah.
Get back on track. And like I said, it was tough because Tatum struggled. But that's why you have Jaylen Brown. That's why you have these other guys to those lulls don't last long.
Yeah. Yeah, and they'll have a
game. Put away that NBA Cup factor, too. That in-season tournament means something.
Do you actually think it means something to any of them? Because
yes.
It didn't look like it meant anything to anybody yesterday.
I think it does.
Really?
And I don't think it does in the sense that, like, oh, nice, we get a trip to Vegas. You're a professional athlete. You can go to Vegas.
It was a double-digit game, and they played it like it was a one-point game.
But I feel like this team is one of those teams that it's like, all right, no.
It matters.
We're winning it this time.
Yeah, at least Jaylen Brown made me feel like that. He's like, don't worry, guys. I'm just going to pull us from the jaws of defeat.
Right.
And we're going to grab
victory. Like, you know, the Lakers won it last year, and nobody thought anything of it. It doesn't mean winning the in-season tournament guarantees that you're going to have success going further, but this Celtics team could be one of those teams that just kind of runs through the league again.
Yeah.
And just adds that to the list of things that they won, another trophy or a
We
cup,
had Mego on our show on Wednesday on the Greg Hill show, and she even said, she's like, the NBA Cup doesn't really mean anything, but I think it would be cool to win both titles,
right?
Like to double up on in season cup and just NBA title,
right? And as fans, we're not going to lose sleep if they don't win it.
Yeah, exactly.
We know what our priorities.
Oh no, they don't get an extra $450,000 in their paycheck.
And that's the thing too, because in the long run, it has really nothing to do with us as fans. You know what I
mean?
Like it's just another thing for us to brag about as a fan of the team. It's like not only did we win the cup, but we won the championship too. Where this is more about like the players. This is like it's like, oh man, we got a little break in the middle of the season.
Now if every fan got $500,000, that'd mean something special.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Then
I'd care.
Right. As a fan, if it was like, well, if you win, you can get a chance to go to Vegas.
Go, Luke Cornett!
All right. Yeah, right, exactly. But you know, it's a cool little thing, and I don't get, you know, pumped up for it.
Yeah.
Like I didn't go into last
those
night's game.
Those courts.
Like,
we gotta do something different with those courts though.
Some of them are bad. Some of them are gross.
That Wizards one last night. The red, ugh. I just couldn't do it.
The Celtics one's too much.
Yep.
It's too much green.
Way too bright.
Too much red. I think the Spurs,
How about just not changing the courts at all?
So that's definitely an option, but
the center court logo on just the regular court, because you have like the big trophy.
Yeah. Yep.
So just take the parquet, take the regular logo out of there, or do what they did to make the trophy like behind the logo.
I also think darker courts probably would look better. So like your blacks, your dark blues, like even kind of purplish colors just look better because they're not as bright and not as aggressive like on your eyes when you're watching on TV. And like that, and it kind of would look like they're playing on like blacktop, out on the playground,
which I think would be dope.
I think that'd be really cool.
Right. You know what I thought too is like because the All-Star game they'd have like an LED court.
Yeah,
do something like that.
Yeah,
change it up a little bit. You know what I mean?
Imagine if the Celtics court was like their City Connect jerseys, where it's black parquet, but then it's like the lime green, light green accents throughout. Okay, you're still incorporating the Celtics identity, but it's far less aggressive on me as a viewer. Yes.
Does it look like a black hole? But like I said, some teams are nice. I think it was the Spurs I saw the other night. That was a nice one because it was like a gray court. Like even Brooklyn Nets, their regular court color. Like that's a nice looking thing. And like Keith made a good point. Like, let's change the color of the ball.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, obviously, like the ABA red, white, and blue ball would be sick. But
is it the WNBA who has like the every other color, like where it's like it's brown, like orange, white, yeah, orange, yeah, white, yeah, yeah. Like I like that. Like the way that spins in the air.
Exactly, because that's how I always looked at college football.
Yeah,
like I was never a big college football fan, but if you throw a tight spiral with the stripes on the ball, it looks sick.
Well, and famously, Jamar Chase, when he came into the NFL, he couldn't catch. At first, he just couldn't catch Burrow's passes. He's like, I just can't see the ball. He's like, I'm so used to seeing the stripes.
Right.
He's like, I just can't see it. And then all, you know, famously has been tremendous since. But yeah, I think that would be cool. You got to find different ways that aren't as aggressive and a little bit more pleasing on the viewer's eyes.
Right.
And I think it's like, oh, okay, this is cool. Yep. And you can keep it in a way that it's still easily identifiable as an NBA Cup game.
Right. That's the thing, too. Is like, you have your Celtics fans, they're going to watch it regardless.
Yeah.
This is a way to try to draw in new people, even if you have to do it visually, not even the product on the court, but the actual just watching it, flipping to it, and be like, wow, let me stick around to see what the hell is going on right now.
617-779-7937 if you want to weigh in on the Celtics today. We're going to get into the Patriots coming up next here on the Producer Show with Shyman Lanny. But right now, Joe Braverman's going to get you caught up with what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Well, we were just talking about it. Celtics knocked off the Wizards down in D.C. last night, 108-96, your final score, despite struggling from three-point land. 11 for 46 on the night. The scoring came alive in the second half. It was led by Jaylen Brown, who scored 17 of his 31 points in that second half. He added 11 rebounds and 5 assists. Jason Tatum struggled, but he did finish with a near triple-double, 16 points, 9 rebounds, and 8 assists. They were playing former teammate and sixth man of the year, Malcolm Brogdon, who had nothing but praise for his former teammates.
You know, people have always criticized them over the years. They can't play together. Their games are too similar, yada, yada. I mean, they've heard it all. And I think they've really come together and figured out how to play well and mesh on the court. I think they're great, man. I think they're the best duo in the NBA right now. So, I mean, that's what you see every night.
The Seas now move to second place and 2-1 in the NBA Cup. They trail the Atlanta Hawks. They won't play again until next week. They'll travel now to Minnesota to face Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves tomorrow afternoon. The final injury report is out for the Patriots as they travel to South Beach for a matchup with the Dolphins. Christian Gonzalez was a new addition to the list as he's questionable with a hip issue. Cole Strange is also questionable after practicing for the first time this season following knee surgery. Kyle Duggar, Verdarian Lowe, Marte Mapu, Keon White, and Dietrich Wise are among other names that are also questionable for Miami. Quarterback Kendall Fuller has been ruled out with a concussion, and starting left tackle Teron Armstead is questionable with a knee injury. The Pats and Finns kick it off from Hard Rock Stadium tomorrow at 1:00. Bruins are back on the road to take on the Red Wings in Detroit. Mark McLaughlin was recalled from Providence for tonight's game. Georgie Merkulov was sent back down in response. Joe Sacco will look for his second win in his second game as head coach for the Bruins. Puck drop from the Motor City is at 7:00. Boston College football is back home to take on North Carolina at Alumni Stadium with the Eagles one win away from bowl eligibility. You can listen to John Mita-Perrell and Pete Cronin on the call from Chestnut Hill right here on 93.7 WBEI-FM with coverage beginning at 11:30 and kicking off at noon. And also in college football, fifth-ranked Indiana looks to remain unbeaten at second-ranked Ohio State today at noon. Later on tonight, number 19 Army looks for the same fate at number 6 Notre Dame. That kicks off at 7. I'm Joe Braverman, and that's what's trending on WBEI and WBEI.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. for millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
What was the impetus for putting Marcus Jones in the game plan last week?
Because he called and asked. That's seriously, he did. I got a text from Marcus Jones, and I'm going back in my mind, like, Marcus would just come and sit, talk to me in the building, I would think. So I was Googling Marcus Jones's, and there was a guy that came through Green Bay for a cup of coffee. I'm like, why would he be texting me? And then one of our coaches came and said, Marcus is trying to get a hold of you. So watched 19 plays of his that he's done here as an offensive player. He obviously brings a lot of juice, tremendous ball carrier, speed, his ability to see the field. So, try to find some plays just to get our guys in the best position to make plays, and felt like he would give us a little spark there. We'll see how it goes moving forward.
That was Alex Van Pelt earlier this week talking about incorporating Marcus Jones into the offense. Been a lot of different kind of opinions and point of views on this, Billy. And so I'm kind of curious where you stand. Do you blame AVP for not, I don't know, thinking of this earlier? Is this something you put at the feet of Gerard Mayo and Elliot Wolf? Kind of where do you stand on not incorporating quite possibly your most explosive player in your offense earlier?
It starts off at AVP. It starts off above AVP.
Yep.
It starts off at Mayo. It starts off at Wolf. This guy is coming into something brand new. Yes, he was a coach in the NFL. Yes, he should have an idea of who's on what team, this, that, and the other. But he doesn't know the ins and outs that this guy's capable of playing both sides of the ball. He gets his list of players, and that's it. And then he's working off that. It's Mayo's job to say, hey, Marcus Jones has the ability to do this and this. Elliot Wolf, hey, AVP, Marcus Jones can do this and this. Should he have said something without really looking at it first? You know, that's where I blame AVP, is saying something before you really had all the details on it, mm-hmm. But look, like, what could we do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? How many times do we throw things out there that were just kind of like, okay, yeah, I didn't research it well.
Yeah.
And that's all that was. But I think it comes to where Mayo's been around. Covington's been around. They know what this guy's capable of. AVP's still learning. We're how many weeks into the season? And he's not a finished product yet. He's learning as he's going, because it's a whole new team that he's dealing with.
And I mean, prior to joining the Patriots, he didn't know Marcus Jones from a hole in the wall.
No,
he didn't draft him.
Right.
He didn't see him play on offense last year because Marcus Jones was injured all of last season. Marcus Jones hasn't taken a snap on offense in two seasons.
Right.
Prior to last week.
Right.
So
and Mayo even said it. Mayo was like, he's focusing on cornerback.
So I was Googling Marcus Jones's, and there was a guy that came through Green Bay for a cup of coffee.
Well, because, no, and I think Keith was kind of railing on AVP a little bit yesterday. It might have been 2 days ago even, for that comment. And I was like, well, he didn't realize Marcus was texting, because I'm pretty sure he says in the cut or in a different cut as well, he's like, yeah, if it was the Marcus Jones on the Patriots, I just kind of expected he would have just come to my office and talked to me.
Correct.
And, like, so when I got a text from Marcus Jones, I didn't know it was the Marcus Jones on my team.
Right.
And that's why he had to Google other Marcus Joneses. It wasn't that he didn't know who Marcus Jones on his team was. It was like, why is a guy named Marcus Jones texting me, assuming it wasn't the guy on his team?
Right. You Google Marcus Jones, guess what? A million names are going to come up.
Oh, yeah. It seems like a pretty common one.
Right. Talk to me in the building, I would think so.
Yeah, exactly. He would come and talk to me in the building. And I think that's where AVP was confused. He's like, so this isn't Marcus Jones on my team.
Right.
And so I think the bigger issue for me is that it is a clear signal that the entire operation is very segmented, mm-hmm. right? Like, the offense is the offense, and it is coordinated and coached by Alex Van Pelt. And the defense is the defensive unit, and it is coached and coordinated by DeMarcus Covington, maybe with a little help from Gerard Mayo, maybe. I'm right. Still not even sure. And then the special teams are their own unit, and it's coached by Jeremy Springer, and that's how it is. They're their own separate unit. And there's no cohesion. There's no... For a company that's like just threw the word collaboration at you.
Wait, there's
all
no
summer.
Collaboration?
It feels like there's no collaboration.
Right, so that's something like you said, and that's fine. If you want to have that approach where you focus on the defense, you focus on the offense, you focus on the special teams, then that falls squarely on the shoulders of Gerard Mayo because it's him to blur the lines between those
groups. Has to be involved
more
with everybody.
More than just the defense. It's one thing for him to be the head coach, keep an eye on the defense, but in situations like this, this is when he has to go to AVP and say, hey, look, by the way, we have this guy who's capable of doing this. So that's why I believe it falls more on him. I'm fine with the idea of, yeah, I think Mayo might even said that when he first got here, that like, I'm going to let the coaches coach that.
The head coach of the offense.
Right. And that's kind of how it is. But he has to let each group know about what can be done in between, especially because if you're dealing with defensive players, then there's got to be a blend with special teams.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Who's going to be on special teams?
Like Schooler getting involved from special teams on the defense. Like, whose idea was that?
Right.
You need that same collaboration with the offense. Yep. And so, like, Gerard Mayo can allow these coordinators, he can delegate for these guys to game plan and prepare on their own, but he needs to have his hands in everything.
Of course. Absolutely.
He needs to be more involved in every aspect. And to me, it feels like he has absolutely nothing to do with the offense.
Right.
Like, that's how it feels. Like, I look back at a guy. We just saw him last week, Sean McVay. When he first started coaching in the NFL, he hired an older, experienced defensive coordinator in Wade Phillips. And he's like, look, Wade, I don't know defense. I'm an offensive guy. I'm 31 years old. I'm just learning this crap on the fly. So you coach the defense. I'm going to take care of the offense. But you want to know what? McVay still had his fingers in the defense. Yep. He was still aware of the game plan. He was still aware of the personnel and the packages. And that's why, post-Wade Phillips, Sean McVay hasn't had dog crap defenses.
This is what you live for, man.
He has adjusted, and even in a world post Aaron Donald, where everybody on the planet thought the Rams defense would suck, they're good because they knew exactly how they needed to target it in the draft, and they knew how they needed to game plan going forward.
Believe it, man.
I think with Mayo, even though he's been with the organization forever, it's still his first year as a head coach.
Yeah, I don't think his brain thinks in the way that a head coach should be thinking.
No, not yet. But again, it's his first year doing
sure,
it.
Sure, like yeah.
You could be around a group of people your whole life until you're in charge of them. You don't know what that's like. And
yeah.
I think he's, again, it's same thing with Covington. Has Covington been a DC before?
This is his first time.
So you're dealing with the first-time head coach and a first-time defensive coordinator who, though they've been with the organization, this is the time. This now they're the front. They're the front, the first face of that side of the ball.
And so as much as I think Mayo needs to be more involved at every aspect of the entire organization, I think the guy that should be looked at more than anybody else here is Elliot Wolf.
Right.
He has been in this building since 2020. He was there in the room when they drafted Marcus Jones. He knows exactly what the skill set is of Marcus Jones. Mm-hmm. Before the season even starts, he should have said to AVP, hey, just so you know, we did this thing with Marcus Jones a couple years ago in his rookie season, ran a couple offensive plays. He just was the first player since Deion bleeping Sanders to have a receiving return and pick six touchdown. So, you know, just to throw that out there, I don't, you know, right now I think he's rehabbing, but like, let's look at this and make sure we're aware of this for down the road.
Right, that's the thing. So you put a person in a position and you trust that they know how to do the research.
Yeah.
But as the GM, as the head coach, you got to provide some kind of cheat sheet for those guys.
Especially a guy coming in to an organization he knows literally nothing about. Like, AVP had enough on his plate just figuring out the offensive line situation and then getting both his veteran quarterback, Jacoby Brissett, and his rookie quarterback, Drake May, accustomed with the playbook and developing Drake May for when he would eventually come in the season. Like, that is enough on his hands, and worrying about the fact that his receivers suck. Mm. Like, he is not going to have any clue that Marcus Jones was a plausible weapon for him to utilize at any point in time.
Right, because in reality, where is Marcus Jones on the depth chart of those priorities?
He's not.
You know what I mean?
Like, when he is handed his list of offensive personnel when he takes the job, Marcus Jones, not on the list. He's a defensive personnel guy. He has no idea. It is, and so to me, like, it's just, it is an organizational communication breakdown.
Yep, I agree with that 100%, because again, you have to give these people the tools to be successful, as cliche as that is. And again, AVP, he comes in, okay, rookie quarterback, old veteran coming in. You have to balance that out. Everything else, I'm surprised he even has time for everything else. You know what I mean? At the beginning of the season, was trying to figure out, how do we keep Brissett up and healthy? How do we develop Drake May at the same time? Marcus Jones was literally the last thing on his mind.
Yeah, and so I think it just shows how inexperienced everybody is.
Yep.
And it's really kind of glaring at this point, and I feel like they need to continue to improve on that. Yep. And I think that's one of the things they've failed to do so far. You've seen improvement in other areas, right? Like Drake May's clearly improving. Like that's not a question. The offense in general, I think, has started to evolve since Drake May took over and started to improve. And even the play calling looked a lot better last week than it has in previous weeks. And so I think you're starting to see things there. The defense started hot, was awful for like a 4 or 5 week stretch. They got called soft. Since then, they've been better. They're still not great by any means. They're still not a good defense, but they've improved a little bit. Christian Gonzalez has continued to improve. And so I think you're seeing improvements on the field,
yep.
But within the organization, it feels like Jerod Mayo hasn't progressed as much as I would like him to. Elliot Wolf, I feel like, has just been like uninvolved. Mm-hmm. I don't know what he does. And so I would like to see more progression from my coaches. I want to see more progression from DeMarcus Covington. Like, in-game adjustments. I need more of that.
Yep. Nothing's happened that's bad yet.
And the thing is, this is a fan base. This is a rabid fan base who was spoiled for over 20 years.
Yeah.
So things like these stand out, stick out so much more than they would if this was going on with another, think of it as some kind of crap.
The Jaguars.
Right. The Jaguars, like, they wouldn't think twice if their offensive coordinator had no idea that they had a guy that could play two sides of the ball.
Well, inject into the crazy fans the fact that you know you have a stud at quarterback.
Right.
I think that makes it, amplifies it by 10.
Yep.
Because then everybody's like, what are you doing? You're just like wasting time for this kid. He's getting better. You're all stagnant, just kind of like hanging around doing nothing. Mm-hmm. What are we doing?
Yeah, these mistakes, I don't want to call it a mistake, but these hiccups, you don't even go on the radar at other teams.
No.
It's just this fan base loves this team. We saw success for so long that when these things happen, it sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, and it's awful too. Like, I felt like last week, like, the coaching in game was horrendous. Mm. It was the first time you looked at it and go, God, I kind of wish Belichick was on the sideline.
Right.
Like, it's just, like, those were the moments, and I'm like, Jerod Mayo needs to get better at those. We are now in, what, week 12?
Yeah.
So that was week 11, and you still don't really have a grasp on in-game, like just like the feeling, the vibes in-game. And to me, that is like the biggest concern so far.
Yeah, I agree with that. But again, it comes back to the fact that this fan base is so dedicated that they can't, it's tough for us to move on. It's tough for us to accept that there are going to be these adjustments. There are going to be these, you know, problem-solving issues that they got to deal with that we didn't have to think about for 20-plus years. Everything was in line. Everybody knew their role. Everybody knew what it was. And now that the changes are coming, it's a rookie head coach. It's a rookie defensive coordinator. It's a offensive coordinator from the outside coming in. It's just these things, we have expectations for them to just click, and that's just not how it is.
No, they need to grow and they need to learn. Do you expect any of them to get fired at the end of the season?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so, just because it's like, all right, let's give you 1 year. Let's see what it is. Because, again, the expectations this season weren't that high.
No.
You know what I mean? So
Robert Kraft even said it to us before the season started.
Right. You got more than one win. That's something. You know?
Yeah, I think Mayo wants to get to 5 just because he wants to have more than last year, because he said that on our show.
Yeah, no, I get that. And I understand that. Yeah, and it's funny, too, because you held him to it.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Like, you put him right to the
fire. Hey, he's at 3. He's on pace.
He is.
He just needs 2 more. He's got 6 weeks left.
So I believe that the expectations were low to start the season, where they'll give them another year to figure it out.
Yeah.
Two at most. But I mean, but still, I think everybody survives this season just because it's so much change going on, so much developing going on, that you really can't be like, well, you didn't do this quick enough with this rookie quarterback, or you didn't do this quick enough with this second year cornerback and Christian Gonzalez and this, that, and the other thing. I think it's a process that I think you at least get 2 seasons out of them.
Yeah, I felt like Mayo all along has had like minimum 3 years anyway, so like he was never in jeopardy. Alex Van Pelt, there has been a lot of noise about him, but I think he's absolutely going to come back, just specifically because of how well Drake May has played. Mm. And it's like, okay, so if he's the one teaching Drake, then I probably want to keep him. Even if the play calling isn't like top notch, it's good enough. Mm. And I want to see Drake keep improving. So you'll probably keep him. And then it really kind of comes down to DeMarcus Covington. And like, he's the guy to me that, if things aren't improving towards the end of the season, could see some issue. Yeah. Like you never want to root for anybody to lose their job or anything like that. But I wouldn't be shocked if he was the guy at the end of the season, they're like, all right, we're going
to
move on.
We have to make a change.
We need a more veteran defensive coordinator.
Does that reflect badly on Mayo?
No, I don't think so.
Because Mayo's a defensive guy first and put this guy in the position?
No, because I think you even said
it was option like 11 or 12.
No, DeMarcus Covington was option one for Jerod Mayo. Yeah, that was his guy. But I think you even mentioned it earlier where Mayo is like allowing his guys to do their thing.
Yep.
So I don't think he is as involved with the defensive game planning and scheming as a guy like Belichick was. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think it, like, does it reflect great on him? No, but it also doesn't reflect horribly on
him.
Yeah,
it won't put any kind of dent in him or anything like that.
No. Gotcha. I think he'll be fine in that regard. All right, so the New England Patriots play the Miami Dolphins on Sunday. Dolphins currently 7.5-point favorites. Billy, where do you feel the Pats match up here? How do you feel this game is going to go?
My fan wants me to believe that they can win, but again, like it's tough.
I mean, they're frisky.
They're pretty frisky. I forget where they are in our tiers, but the I'm excited to see.
Definitely not Mayo grown.
They're not Mayo grown. They're above Mayo grown. But like a game like this is like, I'm excited to see the quarterbacks. I'm excited to see. I know they don't technically go head to head.
Yep.
But I'm really excited to see Tua versus the Pats defense, May versus the Dolphins defense.
Do you give the Patriots defense any chance at stopping what the Dolphins have on offense? Because the Dolphins haven't been uber efficient. Even in Tua's return, they haven't been amazing on offense. They're like, yeah, they beat the Raiders 31-19, but it did not feel like a 31-19 win.
Right. The Raiders aren't anything.
Though. Exactly. And so I kind of look at the Dolphins, even that game against the Rams a couple weeks ago, that was an ugly kind of win.
Yeah.
So do you think that the Patriots have any chance of stopping this Dolphins offense?
It's tough because you only have one Christian Gonzalez.
True.
You know what I mean? And then you have a Tyreek Hill, you have a Waddle.
Then again, Jalen Waddle.
You might have zero Christian Gonzalez.
That's true. He's also dealing with something, right?
Yeah, but like at the same time, Jalen Waddle has been invisible for the Dolphins this year.
And then you get Jonnu Smith out of nowhere who's having a decent season.
Excellent player.
You know,
Jonnu super Smith athletic. Revenge game.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a Bill Belichick issue. Signed him, didn't know how to use him.
But again, that's how it is this season. I'm watching May, I'm watching Christian Gonzalez, and seeing Christian Gonzalez go against some of the top receivers in the league, you know, with the exception of the Rams game. Like that was a little so, weird. Like, to see, like, Christian Gonzalez versus Tyreek Hill, like, come on.
Well, and especially when Tyreek Hill has already faced him once this year and said, like, that kid's really good.
Right. Right. Second year in, and these are the guys you're covering.
Yeah.
Like, you wake up on Sunday morning, like, I got to deal with him. You know what I mean?
If I knew I was waking up, I'm like, I got to run with Tyreek Hill today.
Man, I got to get to bed early on Saturday.
Dude, I don't even run to the fridge. What am I doing?
Yeah, right. Like, right. That'll move that quick to get up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night.
And so I definitely think May can get after it against this Miami defense. I think they're a little bit more stingy than people give them credit for. But I feel like Drake May has an opportunity here. And Mike McDaniel has kind of made some waves down there in Miami by benching a lot of the veterans. Mm-hmm. He released David Long, the linebacker. Raheem Mostert's now the third running back on the depth chart. So
the shine's coming off him a little bit.
Is it?
I think a little bit. But again, it's kind of, I think it's just based on the decisions he's making.
So I think I get that. I understand that way of thinking. I think also he's kind of evolving as a head coach. Mm-hmm. And I think this is kind of an evolution you're going to see from Jerod Mayo eventually. Is that, okay, I went from being like my player's boy, like just being like another dude in the locker room, to being the coach.
Yeah.
Like being like, look, I'm in charge. Like we need to, like, straighten up, get this crap figured out, and move forward as a team and start winning football games and get to the playoffs.
Yep.
Like, I was a little disappointed on how the offense looked without Tua, and I felt like that was kind of a negative towards him. But I think what he's doing with the rest of the team, I think, has been a positive
for
Mike McDaniel.
I get that. And I'm with you, too. It's the, you know, what's McDaniel? This is his
third year. Right, because I think he made the playoffs his first two, and this is his third.
Yep, and it's comes back to what we've talked about in previous episodes, where it's that kind of coach doesn't exist anymore.
No.
You know what I mean? The coach of, like, the hard nose, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, because players don't respond to that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough when you try to be friends with these guys, and then you have to be the boss. You know, and that's what he's dealing with right now. It's, you want to build up friendships and relationships and trust, but you have to be able to flip the switch and be like, all right, I'm in charge. This is what's going on. That's what he's doing.
And even Mayo has had issues with that this year. I think the soft comments come to mind where it's like, okay, like, are you really going to be like that guy? Is that not how you really came off before the season started? Are you going to be the guy that calls his team soft? Like, is that really what we're going to do here? And so you've seen him kind of grapple with that dichotomy there of having to deal with being friends with the players and being their, you know, like almost support system, but at the same time being a bit more of an authoritarian.
Yeah, it's a tough line. It's a tough line to blur, you know, because again, you want these guys because you feel that if I'm friendly with them, if they respect me, they'll respond to it. But some players really need that boot in the ass to be like, no, do it like this, get it done like this.
Especially on the defensive side of the ball for the Pats. Like, that's where I think they need it the most, and I don't think they've gotten it.
Yeah.
Like, I think DeMarcus Covington and Jerod Mayo have not kicked them in the ass enough yet.
Right, and that's the problem, because probably because of Mayo being in that position now, he can't do it nearly as much as he'd like to.
Yeah.
Or how he would have done it before, you know? Because it's, hey, there's three other groups that I have to focus on that I can't do this. But, again, he put Covington in the position so that he would be able to look at all those other
things. That's the issue, again, with, like, rookie coaches at every position. It's just nobody knows exactly. Everybody's still kind of learning on the job, and that's what has created a bit of chaos for the Patriots. 617-779-7937 if you want to weigh in on the Pats or the Celtics, which we talked about earlier on in the program. 37937 if you want to text in as well. We will wrap it up next here on the Producer Show on Boston Sports Original WEEI. This is the WEEI Producer Show right here on Boston Sports Original, WEEI. Shime and Lanny with you up until about 9 o'clock this morning. We've talked Celtics. We've talked Patriots. Billy, I want to get in a little bit of Bruins talk.
Sure, let's do it.
Because you, on your show during the week, Billy is a part of the Jones and Keefe program.
I am.
You have Scoops Keefe.
We do have Scoops Keefe.
And the biggest scoop of all, he had that Jim Montgomery was going to be fired.
Right.
When the Bruins actually released the press release, I was at the gym. I almost fell off the treadmill.
It's insane, right?
Unbelievable.
And it's so good, too, because he's very, and I respect it. Like, we have no idea who it is.
No, nobody does.
We can throw a bunch of names at it, and he's like, nope, it's not that person. I love when we got the one who was like, oh, Keith went to the same high school as Don Sweeney. He must be Don Sweeney. It's like he went to high school 20 years before Keith did. You know what I mean? It wasn't like they
just because they're alumni from the same high school doesn't mean anything.
It's got to be Sweeney. They went to the same high school.
It's the worst game of 20 questions ever.
Yeah,
and
right.
I also don't think Don Sweeney would be the one telling Keith all of the information.
Correct. But it's great. Like, good for Keith for having that. You keep that source tight. You don't say a word. You use what you can. And if that guy feels confident.
Finally
enough,
getting some recognition from the national guys.
Yeah,
too. Local guys go screw them.
Local guys can't stand it. Local guys can't.
Well, yeah, because they're getting out scooped.
Because they're getting out scooped. And it's one of those, like, you're not down here every day. It's like, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't need to be.
Doesn't matter. He's not there to make friends. He has news. He has information.
He has the scoops. Trust the process.
Right. It's as simple as that. It's like, I feel like a lot of media guys are too focused on, like,
I'm here every day grinding it out in the locker room.
And it drives them nuts that he gets a text message that has legitimate information on it.
Yeah.
And the thing was,
and he's right every time.
It came out. He said it towards the end of the show. Like, it was like, we did the random baseball player. And he's like, all right, I got the scoop.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, okay. It was like literally like the last 4 minutes of the show where he like, oh, it's this. It's Montgomery out, Sacco in. And then, of course, Twitter's like, so so-and-so had it first or this guy had it first. It's like he may have, but Keith had Monty out, Sacco
replacing. Yeah. He knew exactly what
correct.
The press release
anybody
was.
Can tweet out. It's like, he's getting fired today. It's like, cause I'm sure there's a million tweets that said Monty's getting fired today, no matter what day it was.
And like everybody also like trying to pull up receipts. Like, I'm sure that Monty would get fired like a week ago. Yeah, well, Rich Keefe said he was on the hot seat like 3 weeks
ago. Yeah, right, exactly. 3 weeks ago, he was on the hot seat. And then, like I said, what helped Keefe and helped the story was the fact that he said it's Monty's out and Joe Sacco's in.
Yep.
Anybody could say that the coach was getting fired.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But he had the literal, all the information you needed on that news. It was awesome day.
And so their first game post Montgomery with Sacco as the head coach, they beat the Utah Hockey Club 1-0.
Yep.
Which I'm pretty sure, Shime, you predicted would not happen.
Ooh.
I didn't think it would. You're right. I thought that this was going to just continue to be. And to be fair, I was pretty close. They were 1-for-7 on the power play.
Yeah.
You almost got I think it was...
You and Fitzy lost by a technicality.
As Brick put it, you
Keith,
almost got Vemelkid.
Yeah, I think like, Keith lost his parlay because of that, too.
Yeah, like it's just like, dude, you probably didn't even deserve to win that game. You're lucky we're facing the Utah Hockey Club and not like the Colorado Avalanche. Otherwise, you would have gotten pumped.
Right.
And that's why I said on the morning show yesterday, I'm like, they're just going to go to Detroit and lose. Like, this team hasn't changed. The energy in that game, I felt like, was slightly better, but really not that much better. The only difference was that Corpy was good and wasn't swimming in that. So I'm curious to see if Corpy will get the start tonight in Detroit against the Red Wings or if it'll be swimming.
And that was the thing, too. It was like, oh, he gets right in and he immediately puts Korpisalo in net. It's like, well, they've kind of had a little bit of a rotation since Swayman got there. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
So, like,
so it wasn't like Swayman had played, you know, whatever the 20 games they've played or whatever it's been by now, you know? It wasn't like he was in there for every single game, so it's not out of the realm of possibility to be like, all right, we're going to go with Corpus Allo tonight. Like,
and that's why tonight's game is kind of almost more important. It's like, yeah. All right, are you really sending a statement to your locker room and to your starting goaltender by putting Corpus Allo in back-to-back games? Or are you just going to go back to Swayman and everything's going to go back to the way it was?
Right. I believe in these little spots to get teams going. You know, look at the Red Sox. I hate to cross sports, but look at the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Francona shows up, wins. They get rid of Francona. Farrell comes in, shoots life into it. They win. Farrell leaves. Cora comes in. There's something there where, like, it's still early in the season. It's still very early in the season to keep a Spock for another 50 games or whatever it is, you know. But I think it's something. I think it helps teams just kind of be like, all right, look. Again, the problem with the Bruins is they're very player-driven. The organization feeds off what the players want, and
sure.
That's why these decisions were made.
I also think that it's weird with the Bruins, right? Like, you mentioned, like, firing the coach, winning. Like, that happens in football. It is almost a blind bet. Anytime a head coach gets fired in the NFL, bet on that team to win. I mean, you look at the Saints, they're 2-0 since the Rizzler took over and clogged the toilet down there in New Orleans. And so I generally agree. But with the Bruins, the last two coaches they've fired have been super winning coaches. Like, Cassidy had a 67% win percentage, and you fired him after you lost
to
the playoffs.
What was Monty's winning percentage?
71%.
Yeah. Right.
Like, the guy won 7 out of every 10 games,
right.
And you canned him in his 20 games into his third season.
Yeah.
You didn't even, like, allow him to fight through any adversity.
Right. Let him get to the All-Star break.
Exactly, or at least Thanksgiving.
Right,
like,
yeah,
it's
right.
Like
American Thanksgiving. That
yeah,
is.
American Thanksgiving. Thank you. And so, like, but I look at it, I'm like, I don't think anything changes.
No.
You've been a winning team. Now all of a sudden, you're kind of not. And I don't think the coaching change is going to change that.
But that's because I think the players rule the roost.
Yeah,
you
probably.
Know?
And probably exactly what
I think
it
that's
is.
What it is. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, those are the guys that are out there playing.
It's a bad thing for them because they haven't won diddly squat.
Yeah, that's true.
They've gotten the best regular season team in history got bounced in the first round, and then the next year they barely escaped the Toronto Maple Leafs, who you've owned for decades. You've barely able to escape them in the first round of the playoffs, and then you got throttled by the Panthers.
Yeah, I'd be curious what went wrong, where it went wrong, because again, like you said, to react only 20 games in. There had to have been something that we have literally no idea about.
Yeah, I'm curious to see if the Swayman stuff is real, that they like are mad at him or not. But I guess time will tell.
Yep.
The Boston Bruins play tonight in Detroit. Puck drop for that one is at 7. The Celtics play tomorrow at, I believe, 3:30. And then your New England Patriots are in Miami taking on the Dolphins tomorrow. Kickoff for that one is at 1 o'clock. This has been the WEEI Producer Show with Shime and Lanny. Billy Lanny, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Joe Braverman, good job. Ken and Curtis are up next, so keep it locked right here on WEEI.
Later.